At 5 o'clock, across London, banks, cafes, mobile phone shops and offices are closed. After three nights of violence, staff have gone home early to avoid being caught up in any new trouble. The streets of the capital have 16,000 police officers on hand, more than five times the usual number. The Met says it's ready to use plastic bullets. We'll hear from one of Britain's most experienced police officers. Also, what the Prime Minister had to say on his return to Downing Street. Boris Johnson is heckled, Nick Clegg gets booed, some alleged rioters appear in court. And in one part of London, Twitter and Facebook are used to organise an attack on the streets by brooms. Comprehensive coverage in PM, starting with Charlotte Green and the BBC News.
16,000 police will be on the streets of London this evening in an attempt to prevent a fourth night of riots, arson and looting. This morning, the Prime Minister chaired a meeting of the Civil Emergencies Committee and said he would do whatever it took to restore order. More than 500 people have so far been arrested. A number have already appeared in court, charged with offences including burglary and criminal damage. Commander Simon Foy of the Metropolitan Police said last night the force had been more stretched than it had ever been before.
The events of last night meant that we're up against unprecedented demand. So not only have we managed to put extra officers out, but one of the things that I'm responsible for is that we have now begun the process of investigating what happened. You know, colleagues have arrested a lot of people involved in the disturbances. What my team will be working through now, using images, CCTV images that are starting to appear in the public domain, is actually starting to investigate and get after people and come and find them who've committed these offences.
The Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, has received a mixed reception from crowds at Clapham Junction, who were clearing up after the disturbances there. Sophie Hutchinson was with him.
Boris Johnson arrived in Clapham Junction to see for himself the devastation. Many of the shops had broken windows, a bank machine lay on the pavement, and firefighters were dousing a building that had been set alight. One resident described it as a war zone. Mr. Johnson was met by angry crowds of shopkeepers and residents who said nobody had been there to protect them last night from the marauding gangs. They wanted to know when they would be allowed back into their properties and why there was so little information. But the welcome was somewhat different further down the road towards a more residential area. Groups of residents gathered with brooms and spades wanting to help in the clear-up, and they cheered the mayor as he waved a broom in the air.
Last night, for the first time since the rioting began, there was trouble outside London. Shop windows were destroyed in Bristol, cars were set on fire in Liverpool, and there was widespread rioting in Birmingham. The Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, has been visiting those affected by the violence in the West Midlands.
My simple message to the youngsters who were out last night, smashing windows, grabbing things and robbing, is don't think of coming out again, because you'll get arrested and you'll get a criminal record, and that'll affect you for a long time to come. My question also is for the families, for the mothers and fathers. Do you know where your teenage son is? Do you know where your teenage daughter is? Get hold of them on their mobile phone. Get them back at home, which is where they should be tonight, not out on the streets.
But within the past hour, there have been reports of shop windows being smashed in West Bromwich.
On Sunday night, the spokeswoman for the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, said the Mayor had no plans to return to London from holiday in the wake of the riots because he had full confidence in the police. While we were on air last night, it was confirmed the Mayor was, after all, heading back to London. 24 hours ago, our political correspondent Ian Watson filed this copy about David Cameron.
Downing Street have confirmed that the Prime Minister won't be returning from holiday to deal with the riots. Number 10 point out that the Prime Minister has been in regular touch using modern communications and that this week the Deputy Prime Minister will take the lead, with the Home Secretary now dealing with the aftermath of the disturbances.
This morning, just after 11 o'clock, David Cameron went before the microphones and cameras, the door of 10 Downing Street, his backdrop.
People should be in no doubt that we will do everything necessary to restore order to Britain's streets and to make them safe for the law-abiding. Let me first of all completely condemn the scenes that we have seen on our television screens and people have witnessed in their communities. These are sickening scenes, scenes of people looting, vandalising, thieving, robbing, scenes of people attacking police officers and even attacking fire crews as they're trying to put out fires. This is criminality, pure and simple, and it has to be confronted and defeated.
Mr. Cameron said there would be many more police officers on the streets of London tonight.
The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has said that compared with the 6,000 police on the streets last night in London, there will be some 16,000 officers tonight. All leave within the Metropolitan Police has been cancelled. There will be aid coming from police forces up and down the country, and we will do everything necessary to strengthen and assist those police forces that are meeting this disorder.
I can give you some more information about what that means in practice. 16,000 officers have been available to respond from midday today until tomorrow morning. The total includes community support officers. And that figure of 16,000 compares to a normal Tuesday night in London when there would be 3,000. The Prime Minister had this message for people who were rioting.
I have this very clear message to those people who are responsible for this wrongdoing and criminality. You will feel the full force of the law. And if you are old enough to commit these crimes, you are old enough to face the punishments. And to these people, I would say this. You are not only wrecking the lives of others, you're not only wrecking your own communities, you are potentially wrecking your own life too.
Last night, the Deputy Prime Minister Nick Clegg said, quote, simply recalling Parliament won't solve the tensions on the streets of London. I totally back the very brave police officers, and that's the priority right now, not politicians talking to each other at Westminster. This was the Prime Minister this morning.
My office this morning has spoken to the Speaker of the House of Commons, and he has agreed that Parliament will be recalled for a day on Thursday, so I can make a statement to Parliament and we can hold a debate, and we are all able to stand together in condemnation of these crimes and also to stand together in determination to rebuild these communities. Now, if you'll excuse me, there is important work to be done.
But there's not much work being done right now in shops and businesses across the capital, which have closed early today to try to avoid possible violence. The Southside shopping centre in Wandsworth shut as a precautionary measure. A spokesman said there is nothing to suggest anything untoward is going on in the area, but there's a really bad vibe. The National Maritime Museum in Greenwich closed early. On Ealing Broadway, Topshop and the Ealing Broadway Shopping Centre closed early. We've had some emails from listeners telling us about their experiences. If your shop or office has closed early or you've been affected, do drop us an email, pm@bbc.co.uk. At Clapham Junction, more than 200 people gathered with brooms by a police cordon, waiting for access to a street full of burned-out buildings and smashed glass. They wanted to start a clean-up operation, a movement which was started on Twitter and Facebook. Organisers handed out brand new brooms to those who'd come unprepared, and they were eventually allowed in to start work. But the mood turned when the mayor, Boris Johnson, arrived to thank the volunteers, saying their work represented the spirit of London. He was met with chants of, "Where's your broom?" Standing next to the Home Secretary, he said there may be questions to be asked about whether the police acted swiftly enough, but that criminal behaviour was to blame and it was in no way justified. One woman had some questions for him.
What are you going to do tonight to make the policing better on the streets?
Let me tell you, tonight...
You talk about robust policing, yeah. What does that actually mean?
Tonight we are going to have a huge number of police on the streets.
We were talking about last night.
I understand that.
Were they? At 5 o'clock we knew they were going to hit and no one was here. I was in the salon when a brick got through the wall, through the window. And no one was here to defend me.
And that is why we are putting many more police on the street.
Later, a defiant mayor brandished a green broom he'd been given to demonstrate his support for a community clear-up. Elsewhere this afternoon, the Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, was booed by crowds who shouted, "Go home," during a walkabout in Birmingham.
Our Deputy Prime Minister!
He's a Lib Dem, he's a Con Dem.
Well, let's hear more about what it looks like today in areas hit by violence last night. First, from Radio 4's The World at One, Martha Carney, who's been in Hackney in East London.
Last night, cars were burned, shops looted. Glass has now been cleared out of the way and the streets swept. But people are scared of what darkness may bring. The town hall's been evacuated. Local businesses are already shutting down. There is a heavy police presence. I've just seen a van full of officers from South Wales. But there are crowds gathering on street corners, and we've been advised to move on.
I'm Anthony Bartram reporting from a public meeting in the Aston area of Birmingham following last night's riots here. Now, the dust may have settled, but people's nerves have not. The clear-up began at first light, shifting the debris, which ranged from broken glass to burned-out cars in the road. Police have spent the day gathering evidence, arresting suspects, and trying to reassure local people who watched helplessly as their property was smashed, looted, and set alight. Last night, the police were outnumbered 2-1 by a group of up to 800 in the city centre. They say reinforcements will be on hand tonight across the West Midlands Force area. Many shopkeepers along Handsworth's Soho Road, where the rioters moved on to, did open this morning, but as a precaution, the shutters came down again at 2 this afternoon. It is anything but business as usual here.
This is Ed Thomas in Liverpool, and 12 hours on since the rioting ended here, you can still smell the smoke in the air and taste it at the back of your throat. It's all from burnt out cars like this one. I can see 1, 2, 3 of them in the road now, but there has been a massive cleanup operation here. Many of those people were volunteers, and of course it's important to say this was not on the same scale as London or even Birmingham, but for the people who live here, for the people whose property was affected, it was just as terrifying. Around 100 people gathered in the city centre. Police tried to contain them, but then they moved south from the city and they came to places like this one, Toxteth. And as they did, they smashed windows and burnt out cars. Tonight, it is tense. The people who live here are worried. One family said to me they were getting out of the city tonight. So to stop that, police have been working with the council. There is a big police presence here. They've been meeting around 5 o'clock till around 5:30. We're still waiting for what police are going to say, which will happen tonight, but expect more officers on the street. And they've said if there is violence, police say it will be met with a robust response.
Ed Thomas, among the email messages we're getting from listeners about how London is affected right now, Miner says in Peckham, pretty much all the shops were shut by 2 p.m. as people were expecting it to kick off again tonight. Fraser Stewart says they closed the Olympic Village site and all of Stratford city centre. And Will from Twickenham says the majority of shops in Richmond have closed early and there's a heavy police presence. John Sudworth will wrap up how London is looking tonight a little bit later in the programme. If you have information for us, it's pm@bbc.co.uk. The South London borough of Croydon became caught up in the violence last night. A 26-year-old man was shot in a car and he died from his injuries today. Several shops had their windows smashed. Many roads were cordoned off by police. Trevor Reeves' furniture store has been in business in Croydon for 140 years. But you wonder about its future. Last night, it was razed to the ground.
Why would this happen to us? 150 years of service is just gone in a flash. If it is the community doing it, we don't understand. It's not comprehensive. There must be something completely wrong in the system of the country that allows this to happen. And I think the politicians really have to look deep and hard and not just give people shields to ward this off.
For a time last night, police were unable to protect fire crews in Croydon. I'm joined live by the leader of the borough's council, Mike Fisher. You want a radical solution?
Well, what I said earlier today was that we needed additional resources to deal with the problems in Croydon. We eventually got additional resources last night, but it was too late to deal with some of the issues, particularly on the London Road.
And when you say additional resources, what eventually came through last night?
What eventually came through was we had the territorial support group supporting our own police here in the borough. That was good news. But what we cannot afford to have this level of lawlessness and allow these mindless thugs to be able to go about their business unchecked, as was the case for quite a period last night in some parts of the borough. So, I said it this morning, I'll say it again now. We've got 16,000 police on the beat tonight. Let's hope that that is going to be enough. But if not, then I think we do have to think radically and think about whether or not we should bring in the army to deal. They could perhaps protect property while the police went about the business of dealing with the demonstrators or the protesters, whatever you want to call them.
Do you already have a sense of more officers being on the beat in Croydon right now?
There are definitely more officers in the beat. I mean, I've just come literally from a meeting with the mayor who's been down to Croydon. I met with a new Deputy Commissioner, Acting Deputy Commissioner Bernard Hogan-Hill, and he's assured me there are more police on the streets. I've seen more police on the streets today. I think that's good news. They're taking a more robust approach in terms of moving on groups of youngsters, groups of youths as they gather, you know, when it gets to six or eight, moving them on or arresting them for breach of the peace if they don't want to move on. That's a different approach to last night. It should stop large groups of youths gathering, and I think that's a right, robust approach to take at this stage.
Thanks very much for joining us. In a moment, we'll hear live from the man who is president of the Association of Chief Police Officers. Let's update the headlines first with Charlotte.
Police in London and other major cities are preparing to take to the streets in larger numbers tonight, after the Prime Minister promised a robust response to three nights of rioting. He's condemned the looting and arson as sickening criminality. MPs have been recalled from holiday for a debate on the violence. Dozens of people have already appeared in court under fast-track procedures to deal with the rioting. Most have been charged with burglary or criminal damage. After four successive days of sharp falls, shares have rallied, with the FTSE closing up 96 points at 5,165, a rise of almost 2%.
Jonty Bloom will have more on those figures in a while. And in terms of people appearing in court after the disturbances, Clive Coleman will join us later. He's been in one courtroom today watching proceedings. In terms of arrests, the latest figures from the Met, 563 arrests to date, 105 people charged following the disorder in London. Sir Hugh Ward is president of the Association of Chief Police Officers, representing the police officers of England, Wales and Northern Ireland, and you're very welcome to the programme. How stretched do you think the police service of England, Wales and Northern Ireland is tonight?
Well, there are 140,000 police officers in the United Kingdom, all of which are determined to keep citizens safe in what is currently very difficult circumstances. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner has asked for assistance. My organisation is responsible for supplying that. It has done. Tim Godwin has the resources he has asked for, and I'm currently working on providing more detectives so his relentless follow-up of those who committed crimes over the last 72 hours, who are currently not in custody, will shortly be in custody. That's a very clear line of his strategy, and we are doing everything to support that with additional detective resources, which we'll be supplying him in the very near future.
Can you talk me through a little of the detail of the logistics of this? The phone rings and you're asked for thousands of extra police officers. What do you do?
Well, that's absolutely a responsibility of my organisation on behalf of all chief officers. The great advantage of a British policing model is we have 44 chief constables who absolutely understand the complexity of policing at the front end because they've all been there, and they will absolutely support their colleagues. So what we are doing is finding capacity within forces which has been volunteered by chiefs.
Where is that capacity, Armando?
Well, for example, in London tonight, you have officers already described from South Wales, Northumbria, and 24 other forces committed to policing London.
But they weren't twiddling their thumbs at home. They were busy doing their jobs, which presumably aren't now being done.
Well, there is obviously an impact in the short term on local policing. A vast number of these officers are on cancelled leave. They have come in off annual leave, off holidays. They've left families behind. They have come in on weekly leaves. They are volunteering. They are phoning in. They're doing what you expect professional police officers to do, and they are now out there. They are highly trained. They are public order officers. The Metropolitan Police has an extra 50-plus police support units from other counties, and that will be sufficient, the Commissioner feels, for his needs. If he wants more, I will find them for him.
How many more could you supply?
Well, the national response to extreme incidents, I have capacity to mobilise up to 273. That is in extremis, and there'd be a massive hit on local policing if we did that. The reality at the moment is we're operating at over 50 in London, and other forces are providing assistance at a regional level, for example, the West Midlands Police, where they made a substantial number of arrests yesterday and are highly mobilised and ready for this evening. I think at the moment I am confident we will continue to supply the resource we need. I do not think we are even close to a conversation around military support at this stage.
Do you think that police officers are more willing to come back from holiday voluntarily than politicians?
I think as the situation develops, the right people have done the right thing. Frankly, I returned at 3 o'clock this morning into London. The situation moves on. We have substantial strength in depth. One saw, for example, in London, the Deputy Mayor, Kit Malthouse, on the television every day, updating Londoners on what the Met were doing, and you've now got the Mayor back. I think the debate about who is where is a rather unhelpful one. Officers have mobilised, they are there, they are available, and they're determined to keep citizens safe.
What do you understand by this expression that's been used by several people today, that we're going to see and need to see more robust policing? What does that mean?
Well, it's, I think what you will see with 16,000 officers available to the Commissioner is an appropriate and proportionate style of policing in the British style of policing. You know, this is not some unrestrained use of force. That's not what we do. What we will do is professional policing. We have highly trained officers who I know I am very proud of, and I know my chief officers are. They will deliver a robust response.
But
that will mean
arresting,
as you had 6,000 officers doing their level best in very difficult circumstances, which meant they were not able to arrest as many people as they would like. I think what you will see tonight is more people arrested in the immediate vicinity of crimes. Those who think they've got away with it, as I've already made that point, they will be pursued relentlessly, and if they think they're safe, they are not, and any knock on their door in the next few weeks, months, or even years, if it takes it, may well be an arrest team to bring them to justice and put them in front of the courts.
I just want to be clear on what more robust policing means. If I understood your answer correctly, you're suggesting that simply because there will be more police officers around, more numbers, then the job will be done more effectively. You're not talking about a change in tactics. They'll be the same as they were last night.
I think you saw some extremely robust and some extremely brave policing by very small numbers of officers, heavily outnumbered, who held their ground and protected businesses as best they could, notwithstanding the fact that, sadly, many people lost their businesses and lost their homes last night. But it's sort of a statement of a blindingly obvious, if you like. With 10,000 more officers in London, the Commissioner has more resource to put out to keep the citizens of London safe as they expect. And, of course, much of the anger that you talked about was from law-abiding people who feel they need more support, they want more support, and they want to get involved. So we'll be looking to those people to identify these villains when they are put up on the website and to tell us who they are so we can lock them up, because I did sense a real outrage from people about what a small number of Londoners chose to do over the last few days.
What do you think about so many shops and offices and other places of business closing early today? People very worried about what might happen tonight. In this economy, shops don't want to be closing early, do they? People don't want to be going home early.
Well, of course not, but that's a very mature response by citizens and shop owners to giving us the space, which the Commissioner was appealing for yesterday, to get on and deal with the lawless people who think they can turn London into an overall crime scene. So I understand their concern. Of course I do. They want to earn, want to have a business. But the best way of getting their businesses up and running is for us to take the streets back in a very clear and certain style. And then the citizens will feel more confident and come out more quickly. So I understand the concern. I think it's a pragmatic and sensible solution. I admire them for making those brave decisions. And I know the Commissioner is absolutely determined to keep them as safe as he possibly can and to protect their properties as best he possibly can.
Can you think of any good reason why 16,000 officers weren't available to be deployed last night?
Well, 6,000 officers deployed in the capital for an event is the biggest response ever. And of course, you know, we don't have the value of foresight, sadly. I think it was a very sensible decision by the Commissioner up to that level. Of course, if we'd known what we know now, we'd have probably put more out on the street, and we did our level best through the early hours to get more into London.
We've heard a lot from local people saying that they thought this was coming. They heard warnings. They were worried about it.
Well, there was what's almost not unique in this situation, but unusual, is the lack of pre-intelligence available to the police service. And I had a meeting of my intelligence officers today who are working across the country to try and look at what's going on. But these were small groups, relatively small groups, albeit very frightening for people who came across them, who mobilised very quickly and moved very quickly. So we were always chasing around London with not enough officers, quite frankly, and the Commissioner has already acknowledged that, which is why he has responded so quickly with support from the Deputy Mayor, with support from the Mayor, with the support of the whole of COBRA, which I was at this morning, to mobilise, to get ourselves more organised today, to send a very clear message.
But that's not responding quickly, is it, if you're waiting till after the event and then sending an extra officers?
Well, I think what you were talking about last night was a unique set of circumstances. You know, people mobilised through modern social media networks, people out, and I think there's universal agreement on this, to commit crime for no better reason than personal gain.
That wasn't the first night it had happened.
No, indeed not. And the numbers escalated proportionally over that period of time. But this is fundamentally different to the entirely legitimate and dignified, peaceful protest in relation to an event a few days ago, which, of course, was the right thing to do. What we're now seeing is as people trying to piggyback that for outright naked criminality. That is what the Commissioner is determined to fight. That is what I am committed to supporting him in doing.
Just one final thought, Sir Hugh. Some people have suggested that perhaps some mobile phone networks or specific messaging systems should be shut down in specific areas at times of trouble. What do you think?
Well, again, there's been a serious debate with the experts on that this afternoon, which I have not been privy to. I think one has to look at the pros and cons. And, of course, by knocking out sites, you run the risk of knocking out all communication to the citizens, and that needs to be very carefully thought through. So I don't think this is a time for knee-jerk reactions. It's a time for thoughtful, proportionate policing. It's what the British Police Service is good at. Give us the time and space, and we will resolve this. My chief officer colleagues, most of which have come back from holidays themselves, are in their forces, making sure their geography is safe. The Commissioner is fully engaged. He has the resources he has asked for. I am confident that he will deliver a very effective response this evening.
Sir Hugh Orr, thanks for joining us on PM. We did talk last night on the programme about the BlackBerry messaging system, which has been used by people involved in rioting to exchange information. The BlackBerry system allows people to send messages in real time, just like text, but with the capability of sending to large groups of people. The messages aren't publicly viewable, and they're sent on BlackBerry's own secure service, making them quite difficult to trace. BlackBerry says it is helping the authorities in any way it can. Christopher Williams is technology correspondent at the Daily Telegraph, and I suppose we always assume that governments and the authorities can, if they want to, if they feel the need, they can follow our texts, they can monitor our phone calls. What is the difficulty with BlackBerry messaging? Why is that so tricky?
Well, difficulty with BlackBerry messaging as such. As they leave your phone, the messages are encrypted, as a lot of emails and other communications are. The issue that they're having here is that this is happening in real time, and the only organisation capable within the security services of tracking things in real time in that way is GCHQ. And they are primarily concerned with international terrorism and other very, very serious crime. And monitoring things in real time takes a long time to set up, and the chances are, you know, they're not concerned with some rioting in London.
What powers do the authorities have to compel, for example, mobile phone companies or BlackBerry, if they saw fit, to cooperate?
There are several relevant laws. The main one is called the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act, and that gives the police and other authorities the power to, for example, force companies to decrypt communications where possible, grant authorities interception of real-time communications. The problem with that is that you need a warrant, and the warrants are granted usually on a person-by-person basis. Now, BlackBerry Messenger, as you said, often works by as a one-to-many communications medium. So in that sense, it makes it quite difficult for a Ripper interception to work in this context.
It sounds like if a bunch of people want to use the best technology to organise trouble, they're going to be quite hard to catch.
Well, absolutely. I mean, but having said that, it was always the way. You know, if a group wanted any kind of dissident group has always been aware of the security of their communications, I think, and it's always been an intelligence challenge for authorities to match that, and this is just the latest one. The police, you know, I'm sure they're aware of this, and if they're not intercepting in real time, I'm sure they'll be looking at these messages and where they originated from after the fact. And RIM, the company that makes BlackBerry, has indicated that it will help them in any way they can.
Thanks very much for that. Christopher Williams, technology correspondent at the Daily Telegraph. The news in a moment, then Jonty will analyse the numbers. First, Jerry Northam with a word about File on 4 at 8 o'clock.
As we all hold our breath waiting for a strong economic recovery, the government has made a significant switch in development policy. Out go the old quangos, regional development agencies, and in come local enterprise partnerships. The change didn't start well. Even the business secretary, Vince Cable, called it chaotic and Maoist. So how are things settling down? Will local authorities and the private sector work well together to remove obstacles to economic growth? That's what the government intends. Or will the policy mainly succeed in areas that are already doing well, leaving others to continue struggling? File on 4 reports at 8 o'clock.
5:31, the BBC News on PM from Charlotte Green.
The Prime Minister has said the government will do everything necessary to restore order after the violent unrest of the past days. David Cameron said what had happened over the past 3 days was sickening criminality that must be defeated. The riot started in North London on Saturday and by last night had spread to other cities. A total of 563 arrests have been made and more than 100 people have been charged, the majority for burglary and criminal damage. 16,000 officers will be on duty tonight in the capital, and senior officers say that plastic bullets have been made available for deployment. The president of the Association of Chief Police Officers, Sir Hugh Ord, told this programme that collectively the police forces of England, Wales and Northern Ireland could cope with the threat.
I think at the moment I am confident we will continue to supply the resource we need. I do not think we are even close to a conversation around military support at this stage.
Within the past hour, there have been reports of shop windows being smashed in West Bromwich, where about 200 youths have been seen on the streets. And there's been a standoff between police and young people in Salford.
The Independent Police Complaints Commission has been investigating the death which led to the rioting in Tottenham last week. We've just got a statement in from the IPCC, and Danny Shaw has been reading it. What's the word?
Well, the word is, Eddie, I suppose the crucial aspect of this is that there's no evidence that the handgun found at the scene of the shooting was fired during the incident. What actually happened, according to the Independent Police Complaints Commission, is that Mark Duggan was a passenger in a minicab which was being followed by Specialist Firearms Command from the Metropolitan Police, as well as officers from Operation Trident. Two shots were fired by one firearms officer. One of the shots was the fatal shot that killed Mr. Duggan, entered his chest. The other caused a wound to his right bicep. And a non-police issue handgun was recovered from the scene. And this handgun was not a replica. It was a BBM Brunei self-loading pistol. It had a bulleted cartridge in the magazine of the gun. That's being subject to further tests, but the IPCC says no evidence that it was fired during the incident. The other question mark which there has been is around a bullet which was lodged in a police radio, which there was some speculation that this came, that was fired from the handgun, according to the IPCC, this is a police issue bullet and was consistent with having been fired from one of the guns, from a police officer's weapon.
Where does this investigation go next?
Well, obviously, there's a lot more detail that has to be looked into around the circumstances of the shooting. Where was this handgun? Was it being held by Mr. Duggan? Was it, in one of his pockets? Was it in the car? Did officers believe that they were under threat, that this weapon was being brandished? Those are the key pieces of information, really, because police officers are entitled to open fire if they believe that their lives or the lives of other people are under threat, and if they believe that it is reasonable and proportionate in the circumstances to open fire. And that will all depend on the threat that they perceived and that they faced at that particular time in regard to that handgun which was found at the scene.
Danny, thank you for that. 20 to 6 now. I mentioned earlier some of the disruption caused by the disturbances and fear of more trouble in and around London. Our reporter John Sedworth has a more comprehensive guide. John?
Well, let's start with the disruption to sporting fixtures. Tomorrow night's football friendly between England and Holland at Wembley has been called off. The statement from the Metropolitan Police says, "We do not need the additional burden of a crowd of 80,000 people on our streets." 4 of tonight's Carling Cup matches, those taking place at Charlton, West Ham, Crystal Palace and Bristol City, have also been postponed on the advice of the police. And the beach volleyball Olympic test event taking place in central London has also been affected, with the competition now set to end early at 7:15 rather than 10 p.m. as originally planned.
What about shops and businesses?
Well, it's no surprise, of course, to see shops and businesses in parts of London and elsewhere closing early. In Hackney, Staff were told to leave the council offices shortly after midday today, and what the council calls informal advice has been offered to business owners to close up and go home, certainly if trade is slow. In Birmingham, the Bullring shopping centre has also closed early. The doors shut there half an hour ago or so. In Liverpool, the multi-million pound Liverpool One shopping centre is getting ready to shut at six tonight, 2 hours early. And the police there have issued advice to residents to bring in wheelie bins and any building materials from in front of their homes. And they're also asking petrol stations not to sell containers of petrol to customers. The Metropolitan Police tell me they have no citywide policy on closures and are leaving local advice to individual borough commanders. That's what's happened in places like Ealing, for example, where they are asking businesses to close early. And there's plenty of anecdotal reports from across the city of shops being boarded up and other precautions being taken. Lewisham Hospital, for example, is restricting visiting hours.
And our listeners have been helping us with fresh information.
That's right. You asked for emails. We've had quite a few. This one from Marjorie Taylor. She says, my local surgery in Raynes Park, southwest London, was closed mid-afternoon on police advice. The Shell petrol station was cordoned off and shops in Wimbledon have closed early. Patricia from Eltham in southeast London writes, this afternoon in the high street, all except three shops and a pub are now closed. Most are boarded up and if not, all merchandise removed. There's another one here from Ian Venner. He says that his office is based in Farringdon, and in response to alerts on Twitter, that office was evacuated along with other tenants in the building, and all shops and businesses in Hatton Garden, that's the jewellery area, of course, have been shut and the shutters are down.
What about people who have already suffered loss or damaged? Are they covered by their insurers?
Well, there are, of course, a lot of people who have now suffered considerable loss, and there's some confusion out there about what insurance policies will cover in the event of civil disturbances like these. So to get a few answers, we can speak to Nick Starling from the Association of British Insurers. Good evening.
Good evening.
Will policies still pay out for loss and damage caused by riots?
Yes. Customers are covered for riot damage under their home and business insurance, and claims will be paid by their insurers as quickly as possible. And that covers business interruption if your property is damaged and you can't trade from it.
What about interruption to trade? I mean, if you've had to close your shop early, then you can still claim.
You can't be covered under that. There are some circumstances where if there's a lot of damage near to you, the streets are closed off, there's some insurances which will cover that sort of interruption. But the main message is there's no exclusion for riot or disorder. I think the confusion arises from the fact that there is compensation that is paid by the police. Police compensation schemes are activated when there's a riot under an act of the Riot Damages Act of 1886. And that's quite an important issue, and that can cover uninsured losses and also some of the insured losses as well. I think that's where the confusion has arisen over definition of riot.
So people should then still be covered. How important is it to put the claim in quickly and get a police report? That's what we understand people normally need to do. Obviously, at the moment, one can understand the police may be a little busy.
These are not normal circumstances. The imperative is to get in touch with your insurance company as quickly as possible. Even if you can't get into your property, or you can't get into your house because it's been burnt out, get in touch with them. Notify you've got a claim. They will understand. They know the problems. They know the difficulties. Our members can't get their own people out there at the moment. They understand that. But notify people of that claim, and that's the crucial thing to do. And if you're insured, then you are covered for these sort of events. The issue around riot is an issue around what police forces have to pay, and has nothing to do with the immediate claim.
And very, very quickly, this is going to mean a lot of money being paid out.
Well, our current estimates are that the claims are likely to be well over 100 million. Clearly, we're still waiting to see if more claims are going to come in. And since a lot of them deal with business interruption, it's very difficult to know how big those claims will be. It depends how long businesses are out of action and so forth. So clearly, the situation is very uncertain. But our members are used to dealing with these very difficult situations after floods, for example. They're used to acting quickly, and they'll be trying to get in touch themselves with their customers. The key thing is to try and get that initial contact, even if you haven't got all the information about what's happened to your property. Get in touch, say, I've been affected, I'm going to make a claim, and lodge it with them.
Nick Starling, thank you very much.
Lots of areas around London then have been getting ready for the possibility of more disturbances. Martha Carney was in Hackney earlier for Radio 4's The World at One. She spoke to one local businessman getting prepared for any eventuality.
I'm just with Ian Topper, local estate agent.
Yes.
When I saw you first thing this morning, you were taking down the barricade from your shop.
Uh-huh. Yeah, now I'm putting it back up again. Nice and simple.
Why do you think you have to do that?
Well, there's another threat of violence and terror, pillaging and just general chaos in the area, so better safe than sorry.
You obviously still keep your sense of humour about it, though.
Yeah, you've got to smile, haven't you? Got to look at the bright side no matter what happens, I'm afraid. That's the sort of chappy I am.
But you're taking all precautions. You've taken out your TVs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this time round we've taken out the computers. We got away lightly last night, I think. With just the rampaging of just the general bits and pieces that were in the office. But this time, I think if they do come in, they'll want to take everything out. So better be safe than sorry.
They are saying there's going to be a lot more police out tonight. Will that help, do you think?
I think more police, more problems, personally. I don't know the answers, but that's what it seems like to me. In a way, I think the police are almost provocative as well. So what is the answer? I think that we should have a curfew. 10 o'clock, everybody going home, and that's it. That's probably the safest way to deal with it, or maybe even 8 o'clock.
5:47 now, Charlotte has an update.
David Cameron says there'll be 16,000 police on the streets of London tonight to try to prevent more rioting. That compares with 6,000 last night. More than 550 people have been arrested in connection with three nights of violence in London. Many have already appeared in court on charges of criminal damage and burglary. Police in other cities, including Birmingham, Liverpool and Manchester, are also bracing themselves for trouble. The Independent Police Complaints Commission have said that there's no evidence that a handgun retrieved at the scene of the fatal shooting of Mark Duggan in Tottenham had been fired.
So more than 500 arrests, more than 100 people charged following the disorder in London. Some of them have been appearing in court this afternoon. Our legal affairs correspondent Clive Coleman has spent the afternoon at Highbury Corner Magistrates Court in North London. What sort of cases were heard today, Clive?
Well, as you'd expect, Eddie, theft, burglary was the most common, a single count of burglary in many cases. Criminal damage, there was an interesting case relating to criminal damage to a police car, which raised issues of joint enterprise. And that's a very powerful prosecuting tool that enables the prosecution to throw the net over a group of people who are involved in a joint enterprise when it's not certain which one of them actually carried out the act of criminal damage. Those are the kinds of offences that we were obviously expecting to see going through the courts, and they are going. They're going through pretty rapidly.
What do we know about the people who were in court?
Well, that was rather more surprising. They were the cases that I saw this afternoon, exclusively men, mainly black, but not exclusively so, mainly in their 20s. But there was no sense really of, you know, people who were long-term unemployed, who'd been doing this to make a social protest. These were men who had good jobs, some of them graphic designer, college students. Earlier in the day, I was told that a youth worker, a university graduate, and a man who'd just signed up to join the army had been defendants in court. So that really was rather surprising and actually rather depressing.
Were they local?
Well, many of them were local, but some of them did give addresses in Kent and Essex, perhaps indicating that, you know, if these riots had been organised through social media, that people were coming into the area in order to take part.
And for those who pleaded guilty or were found guilty, what sentences were issued?
Well, many of them did plead guilty, but what happened in almost every case that I witnessed was that the magistrates said that the fact that the offence took place within a riot was a serious aggravating feature, and that meant that the magistrates felt that they didn't have sufficient sentencing powers to pass sentence. So in every case that I saw, the defendant was committed to the Crown Court at Wood Green for sentence, where of course there are much more severe powers of sentence.
And the magistrates had some concerns about the powers of punishment at their disposal.
They did. I mean, as I say, that message you heard time and time and time again. Because this was part of a riot, because that is deemed to be a serious aggravating feature, these cases are going to go to the Crown Court, it seems, in almost every instance. In fact, there was one case of a burglary where the man left pretty much empty-handed, but he was still committed to the Crown Court at Wood Green for sentence.
Clive, thank you very much for that. Clive Coleman, our legal correspondent. Now, more on our main story, the riots across London and in other parts of the country. Our reporter Terry Stiasny has spent the day in Ealing in West London as people clear up.
Here in Ealing, the shells of two burnt-out cars have just been hoisted onto a transporter to be driven away. Another car still on the road nearby. And meanwhile, workmen from the council are starting sweeping up the mess.
Can you imagine that? Leave your car in because you've had a few drinks and that. Come back, here's your hubcap here somewhere.
What, until last night, was an A-class Mercedes was one of the cars being lifted onto the tow truck this morning. Its owner, Paolo, was too upset to talk about it. But his friend Franco was here last night as well and saw what happened.
They started setting the cars one by one on top there, one by one, one, two, three, and then it got to my friend's car eventually, which they had already vandalized. But a group of them, I would say there were about 150 to 200 of them, very young people, girls as well, boys and girls. We felt very like threatened because they started trying to break into Starbucks, and we were right above Starbucks. We could hear the noises. We said, if they get here, they set the fire to Starbucks, how are we going to escape? They were breaking into shops. They break into this charity shop, the kids' charity shop, and started taking things from inside and set a bonfire right in front. And it gave me a chill to the heart to see how coldly they were burning things like prams and kids' clothes.
The Green in Ealing is not the kind of place you expect to see scenes like this. Look around behind the wreckage and the fire engines, and you see smart restaurants, an organic food market, shops selling baby clothes.
My name is Liz Pilgrim. I own a maternity and baby company called Baby E, based in Ealing Green.
And looking around, your shop's just been completely devastated, windows broken, sort of your goods all over the floor.
They were out to steal. You can see there's some very nice art canvases. Look, there's a nice picture there of a scene of London. They haven't bothered taking those tasteful things, but yet they have taken some of the designer clothes that we sell. I think they've probably tried to target things which are perhaps a higher value. You can see that they have demolished the desk. I think they've tried to stand on one corner to try to get to the CCTV. There's liquid all coming down the wall, which suggests to me that they've tried to throw some liquid at the CCTV to stop it working, perhaps. So a big clearing up job today. I've been absolutely inundated with offers of support from... I'm getting all upset from the community, which is really good.
And this is obviously the last thing you need at any time, but particularly in these tough times, it's the last thing you need right now.
It certainly is. I mean, it's hard enough as it is to get people to shop local and to use their local businesses. I hope now that this will highlight the fact that the community needs to pull together now. We need to get back on track and just not give in to this thuggery.
Further along Ealing Broadway, there are many shops that have had their windows smashed. There's an optician here, a bank on the other side of the road, a charity shop, and I'm just walking past a video store that's had its windows smashed in, its doors smashed in, and it's being completely ransacked on the inside. This group of volunteers with their brooms and dustpans and brushes are sweeping the broken glass from a phone box. Can I just ask why you decided to come and help clear up?
Just to get the community, those shopkeepers back on their feet. That's the main reason. That's like get people shopping again, get the money flowing.
The front of the Goldmine discount jeweller store has been completely smashed. Look into what used to be the curved plate glass window at the front of the shop here, and all you see is broken glass and empty jewellery boxes. I step through the broken glass and over the Cash for Gold sign to meet Graham Weston, the owner who's run this business for 20 years.
Looters had been open, forced to shutter, and they'd been in the shop a couple of hours. There were police cars going past. Nobody stopped, obviously. There was too many people here for them to handle, and that was it, you know. They were too busy going down to William Broadway, securing that area, so they left West Ealing to the wolves. That's the way it goes.
So really, you've lost all of your stock? What kinds of things?
Not all my stock, but a lot of the stock that I had on display, yes. All my watches have gone. A lot of silver. They tried to set light to the place, but fortunately a couple of passers-by stopped them and stamped the fires out with their feet. Thank God they did, otherwise I think they were trying to burn the place down.
I could hear people screaming and running down with like Xboxes and stuff like that. It was
it was actually nasty, to be honest. It wasn't something you'd expect.
Outside the Blockbuster store, Daniel Thomas, who's 20, told me he felt last night like he was in some kind of a movie.
It looked like everyone was in cahoots, but no one could have known each other. It was just everyone was just looking to get a piece of their own.
Why do you think it happened?
I reckon because they knew the police weren't around. I mean, without police presence, people are going to do whatever they can to get whatever they can. If you heard what the people were saying, it was just literally like, there's no police, let's do what we want. Everyone was just out for their own, trying to get more money, trying to do whatever they can. I mean, I reckon it'll probably be about a couple of hours before this stuff hits the streets and people are selling it. I mean, market stalls, everything.
The police have advised businesses across Ealing to close early this evening and suggested residents stay indoors. A curfew, Daniel thought, would only make things worse. But other residents I spoke to today were keen on harsher measures, from bringing in the army to arresting anyone wearing a hoodie on site.
Teres Diasny reporting. I know what you're thinking. Where's the item on hitchhiking? Where is the Charles Aznavour story? We think maybe tomorrow. Stay with us. This is PM. I'm Eddie Mayer. We'll see you tomorrow at 5.
BBC News at 6 o'clock. This is Harriet Cass. Good evening. The Prime Minister has promised that the authorities will do everything necessary to restore order to Britain's streets. His pledge came after 3 days of looting in London and violence in other English cities overnight. Mr Cameron said the trouble was the result of criminality, pure and simple. The number of police officers on the streets of London is to be almost trebled to prevent a repeat of the violence. It's emerged that there's no evidence that Mark Duggan, the Tottenham man whose death at the hands of the police led to the disturbances, had opened fire at the officers. Tonight we'll have details of the government's response to the violence and an assessment of the issues facing the police. We'll be asking about what's prompted the looting and we'll be hearing how Londoners have set about repairing the damage. Also tonight, claims from Libya that scores of civilians have died in a NATO airstrike. And another volatile day on the world stock markets. After 3 nights of what's been described as the worst rioting in London in current memory, David Cameron has pledged to do what it takes to restore order on Britain's streets. Speaking in Downing Street after cutting short his holiday, the Prime Minister promised a more robust police response to any further violence and looting. Last night saw disturbances in many parts of London, including Hackney, Peckham and Ealing, and in other cities including Birmingham, Bristol, Nottingham and Liverpool. Mr Cameron said there'd be thousands more police officers on the streets of London tonight, and Parliament would be recalled on Thursday. Those involved in the disorder, he said, would feel the full force of the law.
These are sickening scenes. Scenes of people looting, vandalising, thieving, robbing. This is criminality, pure and simple, and it has to be confronted and defeated.
During a tour of areas devastated by rioting, the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, held aloft a green broom to show his solidarity with those cleaning up the mess. But in another street, he was heckled by local people unimpressed by what they saw as a lack of police protection.
What are you going to do tonight to make policing better on the streets?
Let me tell you, tonight...
You talk about robust policing, yeah. What does that actually mean?
Tonight we are going to have a huge number of police on the streets.
We were
and
last night.
We, I understand
where
that.
Where were they? At 5 o'clock we knew they were going to hit and no one was here. I was in the salon when a brick got through the window and no one was here to defend me.
I know, and that is why we are putting many more police on the street.
The Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, experienced similar hostility during a visit to Birmingham, where he was greeted with boos and shouts of go home. Our chief political correspondent, Norman Smith, reports on the government's attempts to contain the disorder.
Despite the scale and severity of the looting that has scarred many parts of London, the clear hope in Downing Street is that traditional British methods of policing will still be sufficient to quell any further riots. The option of adopting a more aggressive continental approach with the use of curfews, water cannon and even rubber bullets has, for now, been rejected. Instead, there'll be a massive increase in police numbers, with 16,000 officers, treble the number last night, on the capital streets. There'll also be a much more aggressive approach towards arresting troublemakers and a fast-track judicial process to ensure those arrested appear in court within hours. And announcing the measures, there was this warning from the Prime Minister to rioters.
You will feel the full force of the law. And if you are old enough to commit these crimes, you are old enough to face the punishments. You are not only wrecking the lives of others, you are potentially wrecking your own life too.
The hope in Downing Street is that such measures will help diffuse some of the anger directed at Mr. Cameron and other senior ministers for remaining on holiday while the riots took hold. Anger with which the Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, came face to face during a curtailed walkabout in Birmingham city centre this afternoon. Driven away from the scene on the advice of police, Mr. Clegg later issued this challenge to parents.
Do you know where your teenage son is? Do you know where your teenage daughter is? Get hold of them on their mobile phone. Get them back at home, which is where they should be tonight, not out on the streets.
The Labour leader, meanwhile, has offered his broad support for the coalition's response and said there could be no excuse for the violence. However, Mr. Miliband also called for government support for the victims of the riots.
There are people who've lost homes, lost businesses. I do urge the government to take action to provide resources for those people because they need their homes to be rebuilt. They need to be provided with alternative accommodation. Councils need to be enabled to do that. And frankly, the people who've lost their businesses also need help.
If the riots now peter out, then Mr. Cameron may well feel he's acted just in time to avoid a potentially profoundly wounding political and public backlash. If not, and the violence continues, his premiership could yet be seriously damaged.
Scotland Yard says that since Saturday, 563 people have been arrested and more than 100 charged. Three people arrested in Brent last night are accused of the attempted murder of a police officer. In Hackney yesterday, police were attacked with petrol bombs and scores of shops were looted. In Ealing and Clapham, police used armoured vehicles to push back rioters. Elizabeth Pilgrim, who owns a baby clothes shop in Ealing, said the windows had been smashed and the shelves cleared of stock worth thousands of pounds.
I've come here this morning, all my clothes are strewn all over Ealing Green here. It's absolutely disgusting. They are feral rats. What are those parents doing? Those children should be at home. They shouldn't be out here causing mayhem. I'm absolutely livid, as is everybody else here.
In Croydon, a man shot in his car died later in hospital. The Reeves Furniture Store, a local landmark, was burned to the ground. In Birmingham, more than 130 people were arrested as looters attacked dozens of shops. The Chief Constable of the West Midlands, Chris Sims, said he had no doubt about the motives of those involved.
We experienced several hours of wanton theft, of damage, of disorder. And let me say this, that this was not an angry crowd, this was a greedy crowd. What we were dealing with was dishonesty and disorder.
There was trouble too in Bristol, Nottingham and in Liverpool, where cars and wheelie bins were set alight by a mob of about 300 youths. The leader of Liverpool City Council, Joe Anderson, said the rioting was deplorable.
This is just absolutely ridiculous that you've set out and attacked our own city. This is just setting us back. It's sending a message out that Liverpool has returned to a city that you can't. How can I get investors to say, come here and trust us when we've got people who will go about setting about their businesses, setting them on fire and destruction?
The president of the Association of Chief Police Officers, Sir Hugh Orde, said that in all those places hit by rioting, officers were already setting about the task of trawling through closed-circuit television footage to catch those involved.
People may be sitting at home feeling clever at the moment, but rest assured the knocks on their door over the next few days, or even the doors disappearing as police officers come in to arrest them, they will be pursued, they will be arrested, and they'll be put in front of the courts.
The disturbances have led to the Football Association cancelling England's friendly against the Netherlands, which was due to take place at Wembley tomorrow. This evening, reports of fresh violence are coming in from Salford in Greater Manchester, where shops have been looted and a BBC cameraman assaulted. In West Bromwich, shop windows have been smashed. The Metropolitan Police has been heavily criticised for being unprepared for the speed and scale of the violence as it swept across the capital last night, and officers have been accused of standing by and watching as looters ransacked shops and businesses. A hairdresser, Ornelio Gerritano, raised the issue with the Mayor of London, Boris Johnson, as he met residents and business owners in Clapham Junction. Speaking afterwards, she said the police response to the violence had been completely inadequate.
I want protection. This is what they're here for. I'm not secure at my workplace. I'm not secure at my home place. Where is the police? The police station is up there. Will they be there to protect us tonight? They weren't here to protect us last night. Last night, the news that we're talking about, bringing in the army. This morning, they disregarded that. Why? Why aren't they going to do that? Isn't this serious enough? London is turned into a zoo.
Tonight, Scotland Yard is under intense scrutiny. Already badly bruised and without a permanent leader following the phone hacking scandal, the force now faces further questions over its competence. Our Home Affairs correspondent Danny Shaw examines the current mood inside the Metropolitan Police.
It's probably no exaggeration to say that this is the toughest period the Metropolitan Police has faced for many, many years. Last month, with the force engulfed in controversy over its links with News International and its failure to investigate phone hacking, the Commissioner, Sir Paul Stevenson, and one of his most experienced senior officers, John Yates, resigned. Their departures led to an urgent restructuring of the Met's leadership, which may explain why there appeared to be indecision at the top last weekend, when a protest in Tottenham about the police shooting of Mark Duggan was followed by rioting. The violence spread so rapidly and unpredictably over the next 2 days that officers were unable to cope. Their priority became the protection of fire crews rather than arresting looters. Commander Simon Foy indicated the Met did not get everything right.
The events yesterday stretched us like we've never been stretched in our history. It was the scale, the nature, the spread of events over so many places. And so we've taken the decision during the day to actually up the number of people that are policing these events to a level that we hope is appropriate to deliver a safe London.
The stretch on resources has brought into sharp focus cuts to police budgets, which are reducing the overall number of police officers and staff. By 2015, the Inspectorate of Constabulary estimates that 34,000 police jobs will be lost in England and Wales. A third of the posts have already gone, including about 1,300 in London. The vice chairman of the Police Federation, which represents most officers, is Simon Reid.
Now is the time for the government to take the opportunity to say, let's stop these 20% cut. Let's have a real look at what policing is about and how we do it, because they're taking big steps to doomsday here if they carry on with these cuts.
There's been no sign that the Home Office will review the programme of cuts, but if the disturbances continue, ministers are likely to come under pressure to back down on radical proposals, which would mean a reduction in police overtime and allowances.
The first wave of violence began on Saturday night when youths attacked police cars at Tottenham in North London. The incident was widely seen as a response to the fatal shooting of a local man, Mark Duggan, by armed officers last Thursday. But since then, riots have spread to areas and cities unconnected to Mr. Duggan. These two 17-year-old girls said they'd taken part in the violence in Croydon last night. They spoke to a BBC reporter this morning as they sat drinking wine they'd looted from a local shop.
Like everyone was just going to riot, just going mad, like chucking things, chucking bottles.
Breaking into stuff.
It was good
breaking
though.
Into shots. It was madness.
Yeah, it was good though.
It was good fun.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Like, it's the government's fault.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Conservatives.
Yeah, whatever who it is,
it's
don't know.
It's not even a riot, it's showing the police we can do what we want.
Yeah, that's what it's all about, showing the police we can do what we want. And now we have. It's the rich people, the people that have got businesses, and that's why all of this has happened, because the rich people. So we're just showing the rich people that we can do what we want.
A number of reasons have been suggested for the outbreaks of violence across England. Our social affairs correspondent Rita Chakrabarty spent the day in Hackney to see who local people blamed for the rioting and what they thought were the reasons behind it.
The Pembury estate lies just behind the main street in Hackney, where last night's rioting took place. And here, people I spoke to were either witnesses to or on the margins of the violence. All wanted to remain anonymous. Several said they didn't recognise many of the rioters, although they said that local youths did join in. One young man in his late teens blamed government policy on education, rising tuition fees and the abolition of the education maintenance allowance, and said that peaceful protest was pointless. Another young woman in her late 20s said heavy-handed policing, particularly by riot police, had provoked the crowd, although she admitted that they were only there because of group messages sent out to rioters via their BlackBerries. But another Hackney resident told the BBC that the crowd were intent on targeting the police.
They were just wanting to get at the police, basically. They just wanted to cause trouble for the police.
They were in it for the fight.
They were in it mostly for the fight. I mean, there's a lot of people obviously taking opportunities of, like, looting shops and raiding different places, but there's a lot of people out there, they just want to get at the police as well.
Another local told the BBC that the rioters were simply criminals.
This is got nothing to do with institutions of state power. Right round the corner, you have a police station that was not targeted. You have the town hall 2 minutes down the road that was not targeted. This is around attacking people and people's livelihoods, stealing goods, stealing alcohol.
No one person could agree on what happened last night in Hackney. Many are locking their doors tonight in the hope of keeping any further violence at bay.
The insurance industry has said it's too early to estimate the cost of the damage, but the Association of British Insurers said it was likely to be at least tens of millions of pounds. The British Retail Consortium has warned that retailers of all sizes have incurred huge costs, and it says some stores may never reopen. Our business correspondent, Emma Simpson, examines the economic implications of the riots.
Cleaning up and counting the cost. In Croydon, the Reeves furniture shop stands smouldering and in ruins after the fiercest fire in London last night. This place has been a local landmark for nearly 150 years. Its owner, Maurice Reeves, spoke of his sense of loss.
I'm old now, I'm 80 years old, and it had a profound effect on me because I thought, well, we've done nothing wrong. What are they doing that for? And it survived the wars, two great wars. First World War, Second World War, 1930 Depression. Yet this happens and we don't understand.
Mr. Reeves is determined to continue. Many retailers, particularly small ones, were already struggling with the tough economic conditions. This was the last thing they needed. The British Retail Consortium is warning that some affected stores may never reopen. And experts are warning that a number of independent record labels will go bankrupt after the Sony distribution warehouse in Enfield was burned to the ground, where stocks of CDs were stored. Overall, the damage is difficult to quantify, but insurers say the cost will run into tens of millions of pounds. Economic confidence has taken another blow, and then there's the potential damage to London's image. From the top of the London Eye today, tourists could see smoke billowing in the distance.
It does remind me of Los Angeles riots in the 1990s, though. It does.
We are a bit worried about our little boy here, because all the violence and all the stuff, you don't need to see that.
I think so far I'm not too concerned about where I'm at. I'm going to stay.
As for businesses, they just want to open their doors in confidence. But tonight, an awful lot of them closed early in many parts of London and elsewhere as a precaution.
Local residents and business owners in areas targeted by rioters and looters spent much of today cleaning up. In Liverpool, a Facebook page urging people to bring a brush and marigold gloves attracted about 100 volunteers, and two cafes provided them with free tea and coffee. As our correspondent Jane Peel reports from Ealing in West London, there was a similar show of community spirit there.
In terms of things to bring, are there any particular things that would be useful?
Brush and a broom and some gloves is probably what's needed.
By 10 a.m, a crowd of 70 people had gathered. This was a different kind of mob rule.
Just go and show your support, really. And show these thugs that we're not going to be beaten. I think that's the key thing. Okay, thanks a lot for your help.
There were students, parents and their children, pensioners, people on a day off. Nicholas LeGrew told me he felt a cold fury at what happened here.
We as ordinary people have to do something. It seems the authorities are rather overstretched at present. I think that's it, really. What can we do? I think we've got to do something, and helping them get up on their feet again seems a good place to start.
What were you planning to be doing today?
Well, I was actually planning to sort out my packing for my honeymoon, but plans change according to circumstance.
So I'm now walking down Ealing Broadway towards West Ealing with a group of about 25 or 30 volunteers. They're carrying brooms, bin bags, rubber gloves, gardening gloves, all offering assistance to the independent traders down here whose livelihoods have been affected by the rioting last night.
Just wondering if you need any help cleaning up or...
No, we're okay.
You're okay.
Some traders declined help because they were waiting for their insurance companies to inspect the damage. But Shivam Singh, whose gift shop was looted, had clearly lost trust in human nature.
I'm just like scared of inviting anyone coming into my shop. I might think, you know, they might steal even, you know, it's like they might be doing something good, but I'm still afraid, you know, like anything could happen because I never experienced nothing like this here, you know.
Just over the road, they'd found a new use for the brooms, knocking out the shattered glass in two telephone kiosks. By now, the helpers had grown in number to around 200. Today, the people of Ealing came together, but there's an underlying tension. Businesses were told they should close early this evening, and residents were warned to stay indoors.
The body investigating the death of the man whose fatal shooting by police led to the first rioting in Tottenham has indicated that there's no evidence at this stage that Mark Duggan had fired at officers. The Independent Police Complaints Commission also said early findings suggested that a bullet which became lodged in an officer's radio was police issue. An inquest into Mr. Duggan's death last week was opened and adjourned today. Alison Holt reports.
In a detailed statement, the Independent Police Complaints Commission says that 29-year-old Mark Duggan was stopped by a police team, including officers from Operation Trident, investigating gun crime in the black community, and from the Specialist Firearms Team. The IPCC says it's examining what happened next, but two shots were fired by a firearms officer. Mr. Duggan died at the scene. A post-mortem examination found that he was killed by a single gunshot wound to the chest. He also had a gunshot wound to his right bicep. Forensic analysis suggests that a bullet that lodged in an officer's radio was a police bullet. That officer was taken to hospital but later discharged. The statement says an illegal handgun was found at the scene. It wasn't a replica and had a bullet in it. The IPCC says there is no evidence at this stage that the gun had been fired, but further tests are being carried out. It's now gathering witness statements and examining CCTV footage. But earlier today, an investigator from the commission told the inquest into Mark Duggan's death that this was a complicated investigation that would take 4 to 6 months.